Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D.L. White. Chapter 7, Anatomy of a Hack. Alone at the breakfast table in the Great Hall, Nick put his hand in his jacket, a habitual urge to check his phone. Margaret, the maitre d', appeared behind Jenny's empty chair.
"I'll just clean these away," she said, picking up the yoghurt bowl and spoon. "I'm sure you haven't forgotten the rule about phones. I doubt you want the caretaker to confiscate it until the end of term, or worse, fry it with her eraser so it never works again."
Nick decided to leave his phone in the safety of his jacket pocket, and he pulled out his timetable instead. While Margaret took away the rest of the plates, he started matching the subjects on his timetable to rooms on the map. Maths, again, Latin, history, something called mentoring, and double science in the afternoon. Not to mention prep after the lessons ended. He planned his route to maths, hoping that he'd spot the college's equivalent of the house's secret skirting board panels on the way. With the exception of maths, where the teacher reminded him about the extra questions from the previous day, every lesson resulted in more prep. The mentoring lesson was him and four other students with a teacher called Mrs. Gregory. Her actual subject was art, but during mentoring, she spent time with each student to help them stay organized with their workload. Given that it was only the second day of the school year, none of the other students had any issues with their workload, so Mrs. Gregory ended up sitting with Nick for most of the lesson. At his old school, having a teacher sit with you would have got you teased for weeks. But at Twitchell's, the other four students simply ignored Nick and quietly got on with their work. "Don't worry about your handwriting," Mrs. Gregory said, looking through the extra prep from Latin. "We make you do a lot of writing here, but there are no extra marks for beautiful calligraphy." That was good news, as Nick's handwriting hadn't improved much since he first learned to use a crayon to scrawl his name at infant school. "The main reason for getting you to write things out," she explained, "is that the mechanical action helps you absorb the information. Even copying out Latin conjunctions will eventually lead to a deeper understanding of the language." Nick hadn't understood a single thing during the Latin class. Copying out words that meant nothing to him was all he'd been capable of. By the end of the mentoring lesson, Mrs. Gregory had assured him that he would catch up with the rest of the year and given him some hand exercises and stretches to do while he got used to using a pen for hours a day. At lunchtime, Nick kept an eye out for James and Jenny and Elf. They didn't appear. He wondered if they were having a secret meeting about him. But he didn't wonder for long, as Toad in the Hole was deliciously distracting. By the end of the day, after an admittedly interesting double science lesson about lenses, which resulted in yet more prep, Nick was starting to get his bearings. Corridors that felt like a gleaming white maze the day before made much more sense when viewed on the map. Other than a greater understanding of the topology, not to mention the extra prep, he hadn't gathered anything new about the school's technological side, which meant that he had a lot to fit in to the evening's Wi-Fi hour. On his way back to the house common room for tea, he practiced a few of Mrs. Gregory's hand stretches with his aching right hand. He did spot a couple of the hidden skirting board panels, but on investigation, they turned out to just be power sockets, probably for plugging in hoovers or whatever equipment they used for cleaning the floors. He would rather have skipped prep. No point in doing the extra work when he was leaving on Friday, but he still held out hope that he'd find another Wi-Fi network, and it gave him a good excuse to wander around the college with his laptop. There were still plenty of places he hadn't visited yet, including the library, which he wanted to take a look at on the way to science prep. With a cheese sandwich in hand, just to keep him going, Nick set out to find the library. He turned right into the ever-shiny and clean college, leaving the worn comfort of the house. According to the map, the college wrapped around three sides of the old building,
but most of the glass and steel structure stuck out of the back. The library wasn't actually that far from the house common room in a straight line, but you had to walk around two sides of the building to get to it. The route took Nick via reception and the dining hall, past the great hall and the languages corridor, and then it took a hard right past the maths rooms and the fourth year base before another hard right brought him walking back toward the front of the house, but on the far side. Unlike most of the new college building, the library had a dark, pitted, antique wooden door. This old door was propped open with a pile of just as old-looking books. Nick stepped over them and found himself in a grand space with tall bookshelves lining every wall. The windows were all on one side, high up above the shelves, casting the warm yellow light of late afternoon sun across the dark wooden floors and long study desks. It was like stepping back in time, and Nick pulled out his map to double-check that he hadn't somehow walked back into the house. He hadn't. The library was clearly part of the college. "Excuse me," a voice came from behind. "Can I get through?" Nick was standing right in front of the door, so he moved further in, feeling the herringbone pattern of the polished hardwood floor through his shoes. A small white-haired man shouldered his way through the door with his arms full of leather-bound books. He reminded Nick of his granddad, who was shrinking in age and hadn't been very tall to begin with. "Would you mind picking those ones up for me?" The man looked back down at the pile wedging the door open. "Save me a trip." Nick scooped the books up, they were heavier than they looked, and followed the little man across the length of the library and through another, smaller door which led to another book-lined room. This one had a big desk piled high with more books. Something on the end of the desk was much more interesting to Nick. An old cream-coloured desktop computer with two cables visible, one black and one grey, running down to the floor. He couldn't see where the cables went, so he veered around the little man and put his pile of books on top of another pile near the computer. The grey cable definitely looked like a network cable, and it snaked across the floor behind the desk and into a gap between two books on the lowest shelf of a bookcase. "Thanks," the man said, after nudging his pile of books into a too small piece of desk so that they stuck out precariously. "I'm Mr. Edwards, the librarian. What were you looking for?" Wi-Fi, network hardware, Ethernet cables was all Nick could think of. Just somewhere to... He trailed off hopelessly. "Ah, yes, somewhere to study," Mr. Edwards said. "Not many students come here for the books. But it's quite a collection we have here. Plenty of rare first editions. More collector's items than college reference texts, however. But we do have quite a good fiction section at the other end." Nick nodded. He hadn't read an actual book in years. His granddad loved reading, though, and had read a lot to Nick when he was little, but that was years ago now. "Are we in the house or the college?" Nick asked. "Both, actually," Mr. Edwards said. "Well, geographically, the library is most definitely part of the college. But all of the interior, the shelves, desks, flooring, window frames, and of course the books, have all been transplanted from the original library in the house." Nick looked around. There was nothing in the room that gave away that they were in the college. "I bet you're wondering why," Mr. Edwards went on. "Well, the old building is not a great place to keep books. Too damp in winter, too dry in summer, too hot and too cold and too hard to control. Whereas this place is built to be controllable." He walked over to a tower of books that was as tall as him and lifted a few off the top to reveal a modern display panel. "Touch control," he explained. "With the flick of a finger, I can change the relative humidity or temperature or both." Another example of technology kept out of sight in the college. Although in this case, the control panel was only hidden behind a pile of books. Mr. Edwards was beaming, clearly proud of his new, old library. Nick nodded. He went on. "If you'd like, I can give you a tour of some of our rarest volumes. We've got some first editions just outside." "Thanks," Nick said quickly, "but I need to get to science for prep." "Well, feel free to come back if you need to study. The library's open to all students up until dinner time." "Thanks." It was only when Nick had sat down in the science lab that he realized he hadn't checked for Wi-Fi networks in the library. He spent the next 2 hours doing prep for each of the day's lessons, except for maths, and, of course, checking for Wi-Fi networks. Using a laptop as a wireless detector like this was called war driving. Nick didn't know why, but he'd read the term in a forum online. His prep war driving found exactly zero networks, while garnering negative comments about the laptop from all of the teachers. Dinner number 2 was just as good as the day before. He chose some kind of Japanese chicken curry with rice, and the sauce was so good he picked up his plate and went to lick it clean, then controlled himself before anyone noticed and went back for seconds. He had a chocolate cheesecake for afters. One thing was clear in Nick's mind. He would miss the food when he went home. The common room was filling up. His armchair from the day before was still free, so Nick sat in it and spent 15 minutes organizing his laptop. He did not want to rely on finding a way to get back into St. Mark's network. He would try again, but he also had plans on a new target. Right on time, the caretaker sloped in and set up the wireless access point. And like the day before, the room went quiet before breaking out into a cackle of one-sided conversations. Nick ignored all of this and got to work. With a virtual machine still aimed at St. Mark's, he checked for email and was pleased when he found a message from Recep at Twitchell's. His phone buzzed. He picked it up. He had a lot to do, but there was no new disaster to contend with, and he'd been thinking about this all day. He was ready. "Hi, Mum." He opened the email from Twitchell's, and there was a file attached, probably the map, which he ignored.
"Hi, beautiful. How did the day go?"
She sounded tired. "Probably just got in from work." "Fine." He checked the headers on the email and found the address of the server that it had been sent from. That was what he wanted. Now he had a new target, Twitchell's email server.
"Fine," she said with a chuckle. "Is that all you can manage? How about a few details, or at least a couple more words?"
"The food's good." He got a new virtual machine up and running and scanning the email server.
"Well, that's great news. How about the lessons? Are they, you know?"
She trailed off. Nick knew what she was asking.
"They're hard, and there's been lots of stuff I've never even seen before. I had to do Latin today."
"Latin?" she said. "I didn't think anyone studied that anymore."
"Well, they do here." He checked the proxy setting for the new vulnerability scanner. It was set to look like he was in Sweden. He couldn't risk scanning from inside Twitchell's network yet. He didn't know if they would notice and trace it back to the common room Wi-Fi. He also wanted to set up a couple more external scanners with slightly different settings from the first. While his mum carried on asking questions, Nick carried on working. Scanning for vulnerabilities was mostly an automatic process. Start the software, tell it what to scan, and let it do its thing. It was easy. Nick had no illusions that he was a computer genius. He basically followed instructions that other people, the actual geniuses, had discovered. If there was one thing that he figured he did have a talent for, though, it was doggedly pursuing a trail until he either found something or hit a brick wall. That was how he'd discovered some real vulnerabilities in actual products, by prodding and probing every possible angle. His last triumph had taken him most of the summer holiday. He'd found an exploitable backdoor in a very widely used and supposedly secure messaging app. As far as he knew, nobody else had any idea about it, and he wanted it to stay that way, at least until he decided what to do with it. His first VM, virtual machine, the one that was scanning the firewall at St. Mark's, still hadn't found anything at all. That puzzled Nick, as up until yesterday, their firewall had been easy to get through. The new VM, the one he'd got pointed at Twitchell's email server, was doing much better. It had gone from scanning the server to discovering a whole bunch more systems that were connected to it. This was much more like the old St. Mark's network, and he felt a surge of excitement. He wasn't in the network yet, but he knew that it wouldn't be long until he was. He left the scan running, the more it found the better, and got ready to try and exploit any vulnerabilities it might find. Nick couldn't help but glance up at the caretaker. She seemed to be scowling right at him. Maybe that was just her regular face. Either way, he didn't like it, especially as he was about to break into her network and hopefully take over a computer or two, or three.
"Well, I'm pleased that you're doing okay," his mum said. "Can't wait to see you again."
Nick knew he should tell her that she'd be seeing him sooner than she thought, but he didn't have the bandwidth to think about that right now. The call ended and Nick made a decision. The VM currently scanning St. Mark's was still hitting a brick wall, so he repurposed it, pointing it at one of the new servers that he'd discovered connected to the Twitchell's email server. An authentication box, something all networks used to control the access to every system that it was connected to, which, with any luck, would be everything at Twitchell's. If he cracked it, he'd have the keys to the kingdom. He fed the server type and version number of the authentication server into yet another tool, AutoExploiter. This was filled with literally thousands of hand-built exploits, each designed to pry open cracks in specific security flaws. The AutoExploiter displayed a list of at least a dozen tried and tested packages that could be used to break into the authentication server. They had names like ADCrack V3.6.3 and AuthJacker XD. They were all designed with one thing in mind: breaking through security. Nick didn't have the skill to build one himself. He didn't even know how they worked. But he didn't need to. He just needed to know how to use them. He settled on one called PoisonAuthy_V7, which had been developed specifically to not only break into the authentication server, but to allow Nick full access to all the connected machines. He had to write a couple of simple lines of commands to download and install the package, and a few more to configure it for deployment. Then it was ready to be let loose across the wild west of the internet and into the poor, unsuspecting Twitchell's network. With a flick of his little finger on the enter key, Nick set the exploit on its journey. With no idea how long PoisonAuthy would take to work, Nick dug his phone out from the side of the armchair and called his granddad. While they chatted, Nick checked the payload he wanted to deliver once he'd got access to one of the Twitchell servers. Along with some of the gaming server software, he added other, sneakier tools that would both keep him from being detected and also give him remote access from wherever he was. He also added a VPN tunneler, which should ensure him against any new firewalls that might be installed in the future. His granddad was talking about how late the bin men had been when AutoExploiter flashed a new message. PoisonAuthy had done its thing. It had found and exploited a hole in Twitchell's security. Nick now had access to everywhere the authentication box was connected to, which turned out to be, Nick ran his eyes down a long list of network addresses and server names, pretty much everywhere. With his newfound access, he fired off the payload, filled with useful software. Within a couple of minutes, Nick had virtual control over the authentication server, which meant full control over Twitchell's entire network. After saying goodbye to his granddad, he quickly browsed through the whole network, which was fairly small, only about 30 real computers. He was looking for good machines to house his gaming servers. He picked a couple of targets and logged into them, not via the authentication box. That might look weird in a log. He used a connected update server. Update servers were always sending new files all over the place, and redeployed the same payload. If anyone was monitoring, all they would see was the update server downloading a new update from the internet and pushing it out. Totally normal behavior. While it was feeding his payload to the other servers, Nick installed the VPN tunneler to the update server so that it could act as his point of entry in the future. It would also be how his customers would access the newly located gaming servers. Everything was going perfectly. He'd managed to hack into and gain control of a network in record time. He had about 10 minutes left, and he was confident that he would get his two most popular games back online. He sent out a message letting his customers know the new details and telling them to hold off until 9 p.m. before accessing. With his last minutes of Wi-Fi, Nick was rummaging around his new domain, looking for anything that might be useful. There was a server called Student Security. It may as well have been called Hack Me Now. He connected to it to see what services were running, and paused when he saw one called SS Tag Geolocator. He took a guess as to what it did. As he hadn't seen Elf or Jenny or James since the end of the day, he decided to open a remote session to the Student Security server and open up an SS Tag Geolocator client. It took him a couple of seconds to get his bearings in the new software. The main screen was just a set of empty fields, either for entering data or commands, not much use to Nick. In a side menu, he found a Browse by Area tab, which brought up a plan of the school. It was identical to the map that he had in his pocket, only it was covered with red blobs, mostly clustered around the common rooms. He zoomed in toward the house until the common room filled most of the screen. The dots were spread out randomly across the room. He looked up, avoiding the ever-staring eyes of the caretaker, and saw three first years sitting side by side on the big sofa nearest the fireplace. On the screen, there were three dots in exactly the same position. There were lots of filters and options in the software, and Nick didn't have much time to play. He tried a search for Nick Thomas, and one of the dots in the common room was highlighted with a yellow ring. He felt like waving at himself, but instead found an option to display tags. This put N. Thomas over his dot and an initial and surname over every other dot in the room. So, they were being tracked not just via door logs, but some kind of GPS tracker in the badges. He searched for Elf. He only knew her first name, but he guessed that it would be unique. Nothing happened. Then he noticed a message in the bottom right of the map view. Out of view. He zoomed out until the whole school was in view. Out of view stayed on the screen. He searched for James Pashley. Same message. It was strange. The search function was working, but where was James? He zoomed out, and the roads surrounding the school appeared, then fields, the local village, a bigger town. Still, out of view was displayed in the bottom right. When he'd zoomed out so far that the map showed London to the north and the sea to the south, five new dots had appeared on the south coast, in a town called Brighton. He zoomed in, but at that moment the caretaker pulled the plug and the screen froze. On the map, three of the dots were right next to each other. E. Pontnerf, that had to be Elf, J. Pashley, and J. Tomlinson. Two other dots were a little further away. N. Sokolov and H. Sullivan. "Hey," someone called out, "it's only 8:59. We've still got a whole minute left." "Not by my watch," the caretaker muttered, already on her way out with the access point tucked under an arm. Nick took a screenshot of the map and closed his laptop. He didn't know exactly how far Brighton was from Twitchell's, but it must be miles and miles. Maybe that's where one of them lived, and they drove back every day. But all three of them? Plus those two other names he didn't know. In the 59 minutes he'd been allowed online, a lot had happened. It felt good to have another network in his pocket, and tomorrow he'd be able to get all his gaming servers back up and running. He was buzzing, and the feeling stayed with him when he left the common room. On a whim, he checked the study room. Still empty. But as he pulled the door shut, he heard heavy steps coming towards him along the corridor. To his great surprise, it was James and Jenny and Elf, all back at Twitchell's, and all looking very serious. "Where is it?" James demanded furiously, his face flushed red. He stopped right in front of Nick. "I," Nick said.
"Where's what?"
"The book," James hissed. "Where's the book?" "Not out here," Jenny said, walking past Nick and opening the door to the study room. "In here, now." It wasn't a question. And before Nick could answer, she grabbed his gown and hauled him backwards into the empty room. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.